Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Utopia Talks, the best podcast in the world. Jaguar and KJ Baxter here with a friend of the show on today. I actually think the next 45 minutes to an hour are going to be very silly. Yeah, I do. One of my favourite DJs, producers and comedians, actually. A fan favourite on BBC Radio 1 Dance. Played DJ sets at Park Life, Warehouse Project, Secret Garden Party. They're very mystical as well. Ooh. It's Meg Ward.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mystic Meg joins us.
Hello, yes. Got my crystal ball here. Ready for a good talk.
What's the energy today saying?
Oh, I don't know. It's a bit chaotic today. Mm. I'm feeling a bit silly. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. Like,
I don't know. I mean, I've just cracked open a tinny. So
yeah, have like two sips and I'm buzzing.
Here we go. Let's go. Loose women. What?
Yeah, exactly. The loose women this afternoon. I don't know what time it is.
Who knows? Got some really like big, deep questions for you. And I want to start by saying, happy birthday, Miranda.
From the Shard in London.
Have you seen Meg's TikTok?
Loving you, missing your face.
No, I haven't seen this.
God, straight in there.
Have you not seen it?
No. Oh, it's like a really old video of this woman and her man at the top of the Shard in London with a glass of champers and sending a video to their mate saying, happy birthday, Miranda, from the Shard in London. And there's just a view of the murky Thames.
Oh, God. It's so funny because it's just so cringe and I don't even know how that like got on the internet.
Oh, I'm so glad it did.
But Meg's done her own version. Like, go back to it like at least like once a week.
At least. See you actually. No, you commented on my TikTok because I put it on TikTok and you commented on it like the other day saying back here again.
I just spilled my drink everywhere because I do. You bring joy.
I was laughing at your Instagram the other day where you shared a screenshot from your Duolingo where it was teaching you how to say, are you a dog?
I was just talking about
if you are a dog, you can't speak French, can you?
Tu es un chien?
Just in case. Good to know.
Yeah, Duolingo comes up with some random stuff.
Mm.
So it's a great meme opportunity. Yeah.
You're learning French.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to. Je ne sais quoi.
Nice.
I just glitched then.
She just went like. It's been a long day. Three podcasts on Monday.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
In this room is our last three brain cells. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay, right. First things first, how is your cat doing?
She's great.
Yeah, Biscoff.
Yeah, little ginger Biscoff. She's fabulous, actually.
Mm. How many weeks old is she?
I don't know, weeks. It's like 4 months.
Nice.
You're in like mums say, like, how many weeks?
121 weeks old. So he's two then.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm not that stage with my cat, but. Yeah, I do feel like a mother still.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild. Like, I'm literally looking after a baby animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's so cute, though. And she's eight. She just cuddles me all the time. And
aww.
It's great.
Is it like therapeutic having a pet?
Yeah, she's a little therapy cat for sure. It's so nice. She's just lush.
I'm happy for you. Because, I mean, you moved to London because you're from Pontefract.
I am indeed.
In the north.
Yes.
And
West Yorkshire.
West Yorkshire. How does that song go?
Hey there, Yorkshire. We chuff and love ya. Even though the skies are grey above ya.
Yeah. I remember, I have this memory actually of Leeds Festival last summer. Because me and you were, Reading and Leeds, you like repeat the sets, don't you? About both things.
Yeah.
We were playing next to each other. And then I think you ended your lead set, or maybe it was halfway through, I don't know. You just got on the mic and started singing that, and then everyone was joining in, like, hey there, Yorkshire.
No, it was just going like, Yorkshire,
yeah, Yorkshire. That was it.
I swear there were people in the crowd going, your shit.
Nah, babe. You are.
You can't tell.
No, you are, and I think you're going to say the same thing.
Terrible.
One of my fave DJs.
Yeah, me too. Genuinely, you. Me too.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Mm. Thank you.
And an amazing producer as well.
I feel like...
I think that was one of the first things I ever said to you, actually.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah, I remember. I actually don't know if you would remember. I met you for the first time at the Mixmag Lab.
Oh, yeah.
And I came over and I was like, oh, my God, love your stuff.
I actually don't remember that. That's so mad. I'm sorry.
No. I didn't think you would, because that was literally, I think that was like all I said to you. And then we met again in Ibiza.
Oh, yeah. But, and then we became besties.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. But yeah, so you moved down London. Was it this year?
Yeah, start of this year. Like start January this year.
Wow.
Yeah, it feels like so much longer, but I'm having a bit of a mare with my landlord at the minute. It's kicking me out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, not because of the cat. He just wants to sell, so...
That's a problem that's happening like all over.
That happened to me 2 years in a row. I was in Haringey, my house got sold. I moved to Walthamstow, my house got sold. Now I'm in Finsbury Park.
Oh God.
Let's hope my house doesn't get sold. Yeah, it's stressful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, especially finding a gaff in London. It took us like ages to find one in the first place. But yeah, we'll get there in the end.
Okay. You will.
Still around the area I want to be, because it's just a nice little spot.
Yeah. How did you find moving to London? Because like, you moved here to kind of pursue music more, and I guess did you find more of the industry was in London
and to be honest, a lot of my friends from the north moved down to London as well, and yeah, I've got a lot of friends in the industry obviously here as well, and it just made sense for me. It was like the next move. It was either that or I stay in Leeds and just see the same people every weekend in the same pubs doing the same thing. Here there's so much going off. I really love like going out and like seeing other artists play and seeing great music, and London's the place to be for it. It's just wicked.
Yeah,
I love it.
It is good. Do you feel like settled? Do you feel like a Londoner?
I don't know about that. I don't know if I could ever feel like a Londoner. Too much Yorkshire in my veins.
Yeah, I just asked because I remember when I moved to London like 6-7 years ago, and I remember it took me a good like 2 years to like feel like, okay, this is my home. Like I feel like I belong here.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I know. I do feel like I belong here for now. But I'm not a nomad, but like, I like moving around and stuff to different cities. But this is the most happy and content I've felt in a city ever, I think. I feel like anything's possible in London. I love it.
Love this energy.
Yeah. Honestly, it's magical.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You okay? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love London as well. There you go.
Yeah.
No, it's great. It's great.
Okay, so let's take it back then to some of your formative clubbing experiences, because if you know Meg, like we know Meg, she loves a party. But not that like you're like crazy, like you're just fun. You're just fun to be around. I feel like on a night out, good vibes.
Yeah.
So where does this come from? Take us back to those.
I just love music, and I love losing myself in the music that I'm with, and I love experiencing that with my mates. So I've always done that ever since I was allowed to go out and experience dance music or any sort of music. I used to go to like see bands when I was like 14, and yeah, I've just always loved just being in a room full of people listening to the same music. Literally people's brainwaves like sync up when you're listening to music. It's like neuroscience. It's crazy.
Because she's also a psychologist, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone gets literally on the same wavelength when they're in the same room full of people who are listening to the same music. Like, wow. Your brave waves sync up. Brave waves.
Wow, that's cool. So where were you going out in those, when you were saying you were not to see bands when you were 14, you were like, a teenager, where?
I was really into pop punk and like that sort of scene, indie scene, listening to like Blink-182, like Yumi at Six, All Time Low, 1975.
Mm-hmm. Paramore.
Sort of stuff. And then I got into dance music probably around 16 when I went to Leeds Fest for the first time. And it was my first ever festival, first time ever experiencing anything that was like close to a rave, and went into Radio 1 dance tent and saw Annie Mack DJ, and it was like best experience of my life.
Oh my God.
And then like the same like festival, I went to see Knife Party.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
There's something a little bit iconic about Meg's first time at Knife Party.
Do share.
The reason I know Meg went to see Knife Party is because my favourite tweet ever was a quote tweet from Meg. And the original tweet that she was quote tweeting is from 30th of August 2015. And all it says is it's a really shaky video. Like, all these lights. And it says, Knife Party are best people I've ever seen live. It doesn't even say are the best. It's like, Knife Party are best people I've ever seen live. What time was that? Oh, that was a... 3:30 in the afternoon. Meg quote tweets it like about a year ago, saying the reason behind this being the best thing I've ever seen live was because this was the first time I dropped a beat.
It genuinely was.
Content.
Yeah, that day, actually, I had such a traumatic day because I had this like bucket hat that I bought, and somebody, I was at like Hannah Wants or something. And we're like, oh, it's Duke Dumont. We stood outside of the tent and dancing, and some random geezer just picked my bucket hat off me head and chucked it into the crowd. And I turned around like, what's going on? And then I just burst into tears. I was only like 16, 17.
Yeah.
And I just went back to the tent and I was like, okay, I'm just going to do something crazy. But we already had the pingers and we were already going to try them for the first time. I was like, yes, I'm doing it now. Did it. Went to Knife Party. Had best night of my life, obviously.
That is... You don't forget moments like that, do you?
Oh, you don't forget your first festival as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a place for... Especially as like a young person, if you're like 16, to like, you're literally like on your own. You can like... go and be wild and free. Mm-hmm. Like, my first festival was Boardmasters when I was 15. And my most prominent memory is like getting there. There were like 10 of us. The adult supervising us was like my friend's older sister who was 21 and her boyfriend. And obviously they wanted nothing to do. We didn't even see them. So we're basically on our own. I remember just downing loads of vodka and like Boost energy drink, putting up the tent, and then just like running, like running into Boardmasters, and that's like all I remember. Okay, early raver days. So yeah, so you were going out Leeds Festival, and then I guess you started DJing at uni, and that was in Newcastle.
Yeah, so I went to uni at 18 to study pharmacology, and then just got into raving. And like, I think I went to Cosmic Ballroom for the first time, like the first year of uni, and I was like, wow, this is ace. Mm. I think I was seeing like Jamie Duggan or someone. Nice. And it was just like the maddest experience. Like, I'd obviously been to festivals and seen it in that light, but being in a club experience, and Cosmic, if you know it, Cosmic Ballroom in Newcastle, it's so like magical. It's it was at the time anyway, just such a like a cultural staple in Newcastle, and it was ace. And it was just where I fell in love with dance music, and just looking at the DJs, and I was like, I want to do that. So I just started selling tickets for the promotion company, Ill Behaviour, and like Apex. They still run loads of events in
Newcastle.
Yeah. They still run loads of events in Newcastle now. I'm not too sure if Ill Behaviour's still going. But yeah, I went and sold a load of tickets for them. And then one day I was like, yeah, I DJ too. And they're like, yeah, let's get you on. And then I become a resident with them. And then that's how I got to where I am, I guess.
Wow. I mean, you're being very humble about that because obviously a lot of hours, a lot of hard work. Producing as well. When did you start producing?
Probably like a year, 2 years after getting into DJing. I got Ableton, but I didn't really properly... Like I released my first tune on SoundCloud. It's like a crappy edit of Nelly Furtado. It's still probably my most played track on SoundCloud.
People love Nelly.
Yeah, well, this is it. Promiscuous Girl it was. And that was in like 2018. So yeah, so it was like a year, nearly 2 years after I started DJing. And I didn't really start properly understanding like Ableton and getting into it all properly until like probably like lockdown, to be honest. But I still released tunes and they still did well. So.
I mean, from talking to producers and artists on this podcast, it seems like it doesn't really matter whether you know exactly what you're doing. Like, for example, Lapsley, who we had on, she said she made those first few tunes that... some of, you know, like Station, Brownlow, Valentine, maybe Painter on GarageBand. And she didn't know what she was doing. She mixed it herself. And then like her manager at the time was like, let's get these mastered. Like it feels that the music is, if it just, you're feeling it. And then it's like coming out in its purest form.
I agree, actually. I mean, for me, what I meant by like, the... getting into the Ableton is getting at like probably thinking of a sound and then being able to translate that onto thing, because a lot of the onto my music. But a lot of the time I was just going with any sound that I'd heard and made, and that was honestly what I kind of miss doing, like the beauty of it. I still do it every now and again, to be honest, but the beauty of just like finding something and just going with it and then just getting that, catching that feeling. It's like the thing that you capture is, I can't think of the word.
No, I get you.
It sounds very like free.
Yeah, that's free. Yeah.
Do you still feel free when you make music? Or do you think about it a lot more now?
I think about it a lot more, but I still feel free. It's like a different, it's almost like a business side of it now, rather than... like I think about the biz, like, is this going to work? Am I going to release this? When should I get this to so-and-so? What label should I get this to? But I still feel free when I'm making it. And then it's just the after thoughts, I guess. So it's still like, it's hard, and it's the business of it all.
Yeah. I mean, it's annoying because if you make music as an artist these days, it's so much more, even the actual act of making the art is like the smallest part. There's so many other bits on there. Do you feel the pressure to be kind of this all-encompassing artist, content maker, DJ, everything?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's completely different. It's not just, you can't just put your music out there and expect it to do well. You've got to do everything else with it. You've got to do all the PR, you've got to do all the content. But I enjoy doing it. I feel like it's a part of who I am anyway. Before I was a DJ, my Instagram page I used to use to make memes, and I deleted all them, but I used to make memes, and I'll show you some at some point. They're really funny.
I can't wait for those. I mean, memes are in. Memes are life.
No, these are like really cheesy Instagram memes.
Oh. Live, laugh, love.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I have to say, I just feel like living, laughing, loving, surely that is...
That is the motto,
the essence
life.
Of life.
Do you think live, it's laugh, so love true. Will come back round?
Has it not already?
Like, tattooed on them again.
It's back.
Like, we were in the club like not long ago, and I would just kept coming up to you now and again and going, live, laugh, love.
That was, we've had some silly times, but my friend, me and Meg, it was at Trade.
Oh, that was the night about I couldn't come to.
Trade?
Was that the night? The
was it Trade?
At Egg.
Egg, yeah.
Yeah, Trey is like a legendary, like, old London night, and they do like a yearly, like, party these days. And yeah, me and Meg, yeah, you missed out on a silly...
Silly
season. But hey,
it's been silly girl summer.
Yeah. And let's continue that vein. So, living, laughing, loving, producing, DJing. Yeah, how did you find it as, like, a resident DJ?
Yeah, Do you know what? That's a tricky one because I loved it at the time and it really taught me how to DJ and understand how to DJ and the whole culture and even etiquette behind DJing and making sure, like, being a resident DJ, you're there to make the sort of the headliner look good, if anything. Obviously, you're still there to do a great set, but you're ultimately there to make sure that it's all set up perfectly for the headliner. And that was great. And I love doing that and it's taught me so much. But now I feel like I'm only just coming out of learning how to be the headliner rather than the resident. Because a lot of the time as well, when I'm playing in front, in a big lineup full of lots of different acts, lots of different styles, I sometimes try and fit into their styles, even if I'm the headliner and they're like, it's like a co-headlining thing or a big festival lineup where it doesn't really matter if the vibe changes. But yeah, I have found it quite difficult to come out of being a resident DJ rather than being a headliner because I've never really, it's been really hard to get,
They're different, aren't they? I know what you mean because I had a similar route, like, I didn't necessarily have a residency per se, but when I was at uni in Leeds, like I was just DJing like all the time. But yeah, like on bills, like warming up for people. And I think because So there's different routes in DJing, aren't there?
Yeah.
And like you can never really predict when things are, when things are going to take off.
Yeah, everyone's on their own journey.
Yeah. But I do think, and call this a hot take, if you will, to be a good DJ takes years of like doing it, learning your craft, learning how to set up a room, learning when to turn it up, when to turn it down, how to do a headline slot, how to do a warm-up set, how to do a closing slot, how to do an all-night long set. And it's the craft of it. I do think that takes a long time. Like beyond the technical abilities of being able to beat match, like I'm not talking about that, I'm talking about the vibe.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Those are
yeah.
my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree. And to be honest, I obviously learning that through being a resident really helped me. But it's coming through and then like doing these like great sets, warming up still for these other bigger acts now, and then just coming in and slamming it and not really caring about the vibe of the. They're just playing their fastest tune. They're going up 10 BPM straight away and just they don't really care. But yes. The crowd seem to love it now as well. And I think it is a lot like to do with the way that clubbing culture in general has changed recently, especially since lockdown. Everyone's there to take a video. Everyone's there to get their moment, to put it on TikTok, to put it on Instagram. And it's just like, yeah, it's less about feeling the journey of the night and more about seeing the headliner.
Yeah.
Which is... in playing like a headliner now, it's I've sort of found myself doing like taking a leaf out of their books almost and like not really caring about the vibe of the night. Especially, I mean, at festivals I definitely don't care about the vibe of the night, but like in the clubs when it's like it's a bit more important, isn't it? But yeah.
It's a hard one and it's something we've spoken about before and it's I feel like it's interesting because festivals, you can have normally an hour slot, for example, like a park life, you can have an hour slot and there's like 10 of you on all day or whatever on a stage. And you have to figure out how to, you know, give, especially at a festival these days, it's like, am I going to play like fun edits? People know, have those moments, but then also sticking to what you, your credibility and your integrity and authenticity. And then there's things like time of day, who you are before and after. There's lots of things to think about on that.
There is. I was actually at Leeds Fest last year and I was DJing like the after hours bit. So I was going a bit harder. I think I was like the second person on, there was someone on after me. And the guys on after me, I was playing a song at like 126, 128 BPM. And they came up to me and was like, are you all right to... play a slower song, we don't play this fast.
Oh wow.
But it was a festival and
sorry, that's not even fast.
No, yeah,
I was thinking that.
I was playing quite respectfully and obviously trying to build whatever the night and everything. And yeah, I was just like, oh, right, okay.
I want to know who that is.
I'll tell you after. Okay. In fact, I don't remember the name.
Oh, well, clearly they're not worth worrying about. But that's rude.
And it's mad as well, because obviously with it being a festival set, if you don't like the vibe of the person on before you, just stop the music, give them a clap and put your own music on. Like, it's not even that hard, really, but yeah.
Were they male?
Yes, of course.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Interesting. I've had that a few times.
Yeah, I've had it a fair few times, but that was my main one that I was like, really?
I've had, here's one for you. I went to Newcastle, and I played the gig. It wasn't a great gig, if I'm honest. It was just, you know, when you just go all that way and then there's just like not many people there and you're like, oh, okay. Mm. People there though were having a good time. But anyway.
Yeah.
The guys on after me were the residents for the night, and literally I had like 10 minutes left and I could just feel the duo. I could feel them both like so close to me, like couldn't wait to get on the decks. And I was like, okay, chill out, guys. Shove the USBs in, whatever. Like, I'm just like, okay, I'm just going to do this. Get it over with, leave. USB in. And then they're really like, literally, I played my last tune at like, I don't know, 4 minutes to. And straight away, he starts mixing out of my tune. And there's like 4 minutes left of my 1 hour slot. And I was just like, can you not wait for me? I was meant to be headlining as well, which was even more annoying. And then, right, did that, kind of put, like, muscled me out the way. And then he played a tune. My USB is still in the thing because my music's still connected. Played a tune that was on my USB that was lined up on the decks. He played my tune. Like,
wait, what?
One of my tunes. And I was like, huh?
That's weird. Excuse me. Was he like fucked, do you think?
I don't think so, but he was arrogant.
Oh,
it was a duo. It was mainly this guy, it was a real problem. And I was like, where am I? Like, how did this happen?
No, that's so
weird.
Wait, did I show you that?
No, I don't think so.
That's so weird. I've been doing that all the time recently. Literally,
the girl being like, I don't know anything about Taylor Swift. I don't care about it. But if I ever see that tree.
Why are you on?
Yeah, it'll get you.
It's
guys
rude though. It's really, really rude.
It is. Yeah, it is. I've had certain experiences like that too, and it's just, it is always when it's in a small club as well, or like it's always the men, and it's it's always the case.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Speaking of festivals and stuff, and we've already mentioned Parklife, me and you had a chat at Parklife about how you have stopped doing coke.
Yes.
How did that come about, and how has that affected things for you?
Honestly, I feel like for the longest time I was just doing it because it was there. I didn't buy it. I didn't feel like I had a problem because I weren't buying it. And then, yeah, I was just like, it was like every show I'd be at, there'd be somebody like feeding it to me. And I would be like, well, why am I doing this? And then I'm asking them all the night, because all night, to have more and more. And
yeah,
because that's what it's like. And that's how I felt. And then I'd just be up until 5 a.m. in a kitchen, and it makes me quiet. It doesn't even make me chatty. Mm. It like does the opposite for me. It makes me go in on myself. And yeah, and I just wake up with like the horriblest feelings, like the maddest come downs for no reason. And it sunk in. Actually, it was on New Year's Eve. I was fiending for it at Warehouse Project. And then I woke up the next day, I was like, why am I doing this? Like,
yeah.
I literally downloaded the app that day and was like, yeah, I'm serious about it, and not touched it since, and I don't want to. And it's like, if somebody comes up to me now and says, oh, do you want some? I'm like, I actually don't. Like, it feels so much better now. And
that's nice to feel that as like a genuine feeling of like, I actually, like, I'm not even resisting something. I genuinely like don't want that.
Yeah. I think for me, it's really easy thing to quit because of the fact that it doesn't even make me like myself. Like a lot of people, it makes them like a chattier, more fun version of themselves. But I'm the opposite. So it was quite, and when it came to it, it was an easy decision. When something clicked, I think. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, no, never doing that again.
But do you feel like it's something that the industry does have a problem with? Or
Massively. It's everywhere.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like any green room you go into in any club situation, even if you're the only person who's a guest there and it's, the rest of them are residents, it'll be out everywhere. There's always something going around. And for me, for the longest time, it was just the temptation of it being there. But yeah, I think I grew up a bit and grew out of it and realised that it's not good for me. But people can hack it. And I see people and they're at it all the time and they love it. But yeah, it's just not for me.
I feel like you have so much energy when you DJ anyway. You're always like dancing around. Like,
I remember.
But you love it. You do genuinely love it.
I do. And like, I remember at Secret Garden Party, I was doing like a little set in the radio van. It's like
Secret FM.
Secret FM van. And I turned around to my mate and I was like, do you know what? Adrenaline is just the best drug ever.
Yeah,
you're right though, it is.
And I was like, there's no other feeling like it. Like playing a show, like I never touch any sort of substance apart from a few tinnies when I'm DJing anyway, because I just love the feeling it gives you. Like,
I think some of my favourite gigs have been when I've been sober.
Yeah, same.
Completely sober. I think there was a bank holiday 2 years ago. I had 5 shows and I was like, okay, deep breath.
Be good.
And I'm not going to drink anything. I didn't drink anything. And it was just such a buzz. Particularly Field Day, I did a set. It was like opening the stage and then it kind of filled up and just all my friends were there. It was fab. And then just the euphoria. If anything, you feel it more. Like the alcohol doesn't give you that. Mm. If anything, it dulls. It dulls
it. Yeah, definitely. It does. It's so magical. I always have like a non-alcoholic beer when I'm on my own as well.
Love a non-alc.
Love a non-alc. I do think, to be fair, like sober DJing has become a bit more like talked about recently. I've seen a lot more people doing, like speaking out about it. And it's great to see. But I think if like 10 years ago, different story. Like if you weren't partying, you'd be like, what are you? Like, what are you doing? You're not a real DJ. But yeah, it's different now. I'm glad.
Yeah, me too. Because this is just...
It's like, unhealthy.
It is. Yeah. I want to live to till I'm a wrinkly old prune of 100 and something, you know.
I can see that.
There's little kids on my porch. Still doing the podcast.
Sometimes when you say like, what was it you were saying about like, like you're of a different generation to me. It's like 5 years younger than you, like less.
Is that what she says to you as well?
Yeah, just already she's speaking as if like you're like
3 years older.
60.
She's like, oh, you keep me young.
I'm like the mum from Mean Girls. What I also love about you, Meg, is not just your zest for life and your love of jeans. No, but you work hard, you know, and you've been doing all this, like, you know, you've got a master's in psychology all the while when you were producing your music and like getting all this traction, playing shows, getting played on the radio, you know, you have a day job and you balance all this stuff. You've always like had so many things going on at the same time.
Yeah.
How do you find that?
I mean, I'm very ADHD anyway. So I love doing loads of things at once. So when I shouldn't be saying this if my boss hears, but like if I'm doing work at my day job and then I'm like every now and again I'll just go on my laptop and make a song and then come back and then make the song again and then yeah. I just like doing loads of things at once, and to be honest, it pays my bills. It's a secure thing that I never really I thought I would be fine without. But then I had a weird time like a couple of years ago. I don't know, it was like just after lockdown, like a couple of years ago, where I had to like go on Universal Credit because I lost my job in mental health because I got made redundant because they didn't need me anymore because I was working like bank 0-hour contracts. So they didn't need me anymore pretty much. And I was like, well, I can't do this. So there was this small part of time where I didn't have a job. I didn't know what to do. I only had DJ and that wasn't really paying the bills at that time. So now I'm not going to do it until I'm not going to take the dive into just doing DJing until I'm fully ready. And for me, I think being financially stable is something that I really need because I've never really had that when I was younger. Like from a working class background, never really came from anything. My mum always struggled for money. So it's just nice to like have that job and that bit of security because I'm never really struggling for money then. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely see that. And I think it's also just sensible to make sure you've got enough money to live. And also I think it's also the fact that because you've like spoken about it a bit on Twitter and you've been honest about it. I think it's good because I think it's amazing to see you being honest about, you know, it's not all like sunshine and rainbows being a DJ and like,
no,
you still, you still have a day job, you know, so you're still not fully like paying your bills with music.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, I feel like I use my day job because I work 3 days a week. I've been lucky enough to go part-time recently, which has been great. I work 3 days a week and that pays for all my rent and bills. And then I can use the rest of my money that I earn from music to invest back into music rather than spend it on my rent, which would pain me at the minute because I'm not like touring the world, like doing so many shows. Like I'd need a couple more shows a month to be able to fund that. Mm. So at the minute I'm happy and I enjoy my job as well. It's chilling.
Great.
I just sell body armor. It's absolutely fine.
We'll go to you for all body armor needs.
Yeah. Any bulletproof vests you need. That's great.
Good to know. but you've spoken about it a lot online, and what do you think are the barriers for working class people trying to make it into creative industries?
Yeah, there are massive barriers, I think. And I feel like in my situation now is a perfect example. Like I'm having to do like my job. I only just got out a load of debt from lockdown recently because my parents couldn't support me. They don't have like, they have to pay their own bills and stuff. And I've never really had a bit of a like a trust like fund or like any sort of like support from family. So it's, yeah. Because of that, I've not got like my mum saying, "Oh, it's fine, quit your job. You've got enough money. If you ever like run short, I've got you there." Because I lend my mum money sometimes. Like I have to look after her as well. And I feel like that's a massive difference compared to someone who's come from a bit better off background. Somebody who has had their parents, I don't know, build them a studio, support them buying their first pair of decks, all that sort. I use my student loan to buy my first pair of decks. And I use my student loan to buy Ableton as well, which is great. And I used it instead of, I just eat beans on toast and buy my student loan. Anyway, I think there are a lot of barriers in that sort of stuff. It's just financially mainly. Mm. And also, yeah, the contacts of understanding how to run a business and stuff. And it's harder when your parents aren't really great with money as well to understand your own money. So it's a lot of learning. And it's just that little leg up that other people have that you don't have, which I feel like, that's it.
Yeah. Are there any ways that you would like to see the industry like change in order to help people more?
Like, has anyone, have you seen any initiatives or anything that are good?
Sure, yeah. There are a few. I never really saw them when I was learning or in getting into music, but there's loads of stuff for, especially for women and non-binary people and every like other minorities. It's really, just what you do, Jag, is great as well, what you were doing.
Oh, the Future 1000
initiative.
Yeah.
That was like, that's similar. It's a bit for minorities. Yeah. That's free. And I know there's a few other stuff. Like, I feel like Pioneer do some bits and bobs, don't they?
Mm.
But it's hard to find, to be honest. There should be more,
you know, and I think this is something that I don't think is spoken about enough in music. We talk, you know, we all talk about minorities a lot, and I feel like sometimes, a lot of the time, class is not spoken about enough.
Yeah.
You know, and I recognize I've come from quite a privileged background. I'm from the Channel Islands, and I went to a boarding school, which, I mean, I went to a boarding school till I was 16. No, I didn't. That's not true. That is true. Till I was 16.
Water.
And then I went to college. Actually, way preferred life at college, but that's another story.
Yeah.
But I recognize that having, like, my parents being able to do that and get me to a private education and have, I guess, a leg up where, you know, you have more attention in school and I guess there's, you know, you have more skills that other people might not have. Fully recognize that. And the more, you know what's crazy is in the music industry, the more people you meet, I can like spot them from a mile away. And there's a lot of people, I'd say majority of people in the music industry have had privileged upbringings.
100%.
And no shade on them. Some people definitely lie about it, for sure. whatever. But I think we need to talk about this because I think the reason why is because it's really hard to break into because you do a lot of things for free, or you need to have a day job as well. Or if you don't, you need to have funds to support yourself, make sure your rent is paid, make sure there's food on the table. A lot of people don't have that.
Yeah.
And so they can't actually achieve their dreams or get into music or creativity.
Literally, it's as simple as well. Like, people get to move back with their parents and they don't have to pay rent to then pursue like writing music and then going out and like a lot of people from well-off backgrounds don't get to do that, but it is majority of the case. The people who do get to move back with their parents are people who are from decent backgrounds who have a nice house to go back to. So it's harder to think that I've got to pay like rent and everything, and these people have got their parents. These people, these why are you on?
These people,
they obviously get a lot of stuff handed to them, and I'm not sad or like mad at them. It's just one of those things, isn't it? Really, it's something to be sort of jealous of, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, I'm really happy and proud of where I've come from, and everyone in the village loves me. So
I bet they do. Guest list for life.
And again, the village.
And it's a credit to you as well that you've overcome any of those problems as well.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of hurdles that happen in the music industry are a lot as well, but then you got the life hurdles as well.
Yeah.
Bow, bow, bow. But it's good, and it makes you realize what you're doing is actually what you love, and it's what you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's what you truly really want to do because you're fucking trying hard to do it.
Yeah.
Well, I already loved you, but now I love you even more. So
I love that.
We love the only gay in the village.
We do. Well, speaking of only gay in the village, you know, like, genuinely growing up queer in a small town, were you the only gay in the village?
Well, I didn't come out until I was like 16. Like 17.
Fair.
No, I didn't come out in college.
No,
I came out in uni, yeah. So there was a lot of homophobes in my area, the village. There's a lot of people that from school that have come out now, but nobody came out in school. There wasn't out person in
my
school.
Same at my school. Yeah.
Same.
And now I see people at London Pride and I'm like, wait, what are you doing here?
Oh,
Fruity. That's your girlfriend. Oh, fair enough.
Yeah,
it's so weird. I feel like it's a lot more open now. You see a lot more like gay kids now, which is great. Then we were never not there. There's more space for them now, which is lovely.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've been influenced by a queer scene? Maybe not in that sense, because there probably wasn't a queer scene for you growing up.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, I love... It's hard because obviously all dance music is queer music, and it's and I've always loved like going to Pride and stuff when I was younger, but yeah, in terms of like the dance queer scene, there's not really that much in like Yorkshire. There's a couple of gay nights in Leeds that play good music, but in Newcastle it was just like the standard gay clubs playing Lady Gaga, yeah. All that. It's only really since coming to London that I've really started experiencing like good queer culture. But maybe I went to the wrong places when I was in the North.
Yeah, Leeds does. Leeds has like Love Muscle.
Drip,
yeah. Oh, I'm trying to think. All the nights. Oh, I don't know if Chunk. Was Chunk place when you were there? Did you ever go to Chunk? No, maybe it's gone.
No, I'd never heard of Love Muscle either.
Oh, Love Muscle. Is that Wolf? Do you know Wolf Chambers?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a little spot, that.
That is a spot.
It's like you got to pay like a quid for a membership and then...
Yeah.
That's great.
There's some really good queer nights there.
Oh, that's ace.
And yeah, London, I feel like we are spoilt for choice. And London, it's just very rich, isn't it, in London? And like the queer scene is massive here and kind of nuanced, and there's different intersections and... I don't know.
You can listen to any genre of music and go to a queer night. Mm. Whereas I think going up north, it's a bit more hit and miss on what music it is. So yeah, I just went to the music I wanted to go see. I didn't really think about the queer culture, which is kind of sad because I feel like I've got more gay friends now than I've ever had, which is great.
Yeah. I feel like something that has inspired you, which is very clear in your music, is Acid.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
She's got an acid tattoo on the old left forearm.
Yeah. I love, the 303. It's an iconic synth. Just makes the acid sound. It's just something about it, like a little squelchy.
Yeah. I actually loved the acid mix that you put on your SoundCloud a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thank you. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do at the moment. I'm just trying to put loads of music out that I love and try and show people what I'm about. Sort of play stuff that I like really enjoy playing and stuff that's going back to my roots as well. Because I've been a fan of Acid House. I'm obsessed with the origin story of Acid House. It's just so interesting.
What, as in like the Acid House raves? Or do you mean, as in raves. How the sound was made?
The raves and the sound, yeah. How the two, because Acid House raves, they were like the illegal raves in the 80s and stuff, like the late 80s. Mm. But this sound came from like, it's like the synthesizers, fake bass guitar synth. And then they were just, it got pretty much discontinued because it was so bad at replicating a bass guitar. Mm. And then they just... These two guys,
wasn't it like an accident that they
made
the sound?
And they started making it and they're like, oh, do that, and they're like, oh, that's sick.
How mad is that?
Yeah,
so sick. What's their names?
Acid House, made by Future and DJ Pierre.
Yeah
nice. Those guys,
they're literally, it's just such an interesting story. I've watched so many documentaries on it and I wish I was kind of alive around then just so I could experience the nuance of that sound, because I don't think anything since for me has like been such a defining sound that's like come about, really. I mean, maybe the M1 organ, like the Show Me Love, like that's quite iconic as well, but I don't think anything really comes around like now. That's
you're
like
gonna
an
be
iconic
the next
sound
to make sound. Something.
Well, like create a synth.
Yeah.
Yeah, shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I'll put my money on you.
Okay.
Me too, actually.
Yeah. Well, you've got new music coming out, right?
Yeah, and that's actually like an ode to Acid House. And
nice.
The whole idea behind it is literally me being obsessed with the origin story of Acid House.
Sick.
And I used AI actually to make the vocal.
Okay. How? And what does it sound like? What did you do?
It's just like spoken word. It's this guy talking about going to a club. So I just wrote the lyrics. He was like talking about going to a club and asking about He's like asked somebody what this sound is, and somebody said, "Oh, they call it acid." And the song's called "They Call It Acid," and I literally just wrote the lyrics and then just found this guy AI voice that sounded most similar to like an American Chicago guy, and yeah,
cool.
Then copied it and put it into the song.
Oh my god, I cannot wait to hear.
You've done spoken word stuff before, haven't you?
Yeah,
your last release.
Yeah, with my own voice. Yeah,
yeah. How was that? How, like, I love the track, but how was it for you? Like writing that, was it something you've always wanted to do? Have you been secretly doing spoken word for years and no one's known? Was it a new thing?
So I really like writing poetry.
Yeah,
it's one way of like getting my feelings on the page and still like being quite creative as like a creative output. It's a really nice form of therapy for me. And I was feeling really down one day, and I wrote the poem just expressing my feelings. I lost a friend. She passed away quite like a year ago, and it was around that time. And yeah, I just got my feelings down, and I was like saying it, and yeah. And then I wrote the song, and I was like, do you know what? I'm gonna say this poem over it, and it worked really well.
Yeah, it's quite a sad.
Yeah. But kind of nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Very.
And something a bit different, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, you don't really get much spoken word in dance music.
And just emotion as well. But you, like, correct me if I'm wrong, you have like a musical background in terms of instruments.
Well, I play the trumpet. I play the trumpet until I was like 14, and then I quit.
Trumpet.
And then I started playing rugby, and I got obsessed with rugby.
Rugby?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's a rugby player.
I didn't know.
Why is
that,
why is that the same?
I'm a pocket
energy.
Rocket.
Why is that same energy? Playing the trumpet and playing rugby.
It's just like the musical version, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's rugby league as well.
Same thing.
Yeah, I was, yeah.
But you're the so little small.
Yeah, pocket rocket.
Aww.
Wow, I wasn't expecting that, but. Okay. Is there more? Is there more? You're about to say there's more?
No. And then I taught myself guitar as well.
There it is.
When I wanted to be cooler. Mm. So I played the trumpet until, and then I did music at GCSE, and they were like, you either need to play trumpet or you need to sort yourself out and do something else. And I was like, first I'll just learn how to play guitar. And I did that, and used to do little performances in school. It was really cute. I've got a really traumatic experience, though, from when I was in school. And this guy, like, who was like a really good guitar player, played. My music teacher asked him to tune the guitar before I went on stage. He tuned it, but he tuned it into the wrong key. And I went on stage with my mate who was singing, played the whole song, and it was so out of key.
Oh.
And I was just stood there like, I can't do anything. I've just got to carry on playing. And the whole time I was like, rah, rah, rah.
That must have sounded.
And your friend trying to sing as well. Like, oh,
yeah, so she sounded really off key. I was like, this core memory.
Still traumatized.
Was that a school talent show or something?
It was just like a showcase of music.
Oh.
Like, everyone's parents were there, all teachers were there.
Oh, no.
My maths teacher the next day came up to me and was like, I'd finished my work, and it was like, you all right? Everything in tune, everything in key. And I was literally looked at him like,
that's so mean.
Yeah, literally.
It was, you remember what the song was?
Yes.
What was it? Go on.
It was Miley Cyrus' Wrecking Ball.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
That's a big song.
Yeah.
Especially the vocal, Jesus.
Oh, bless her. I don't think she could sing it that well anyways.
Wow.
No, she had a great voice.
Back to your music.
Well, that's my music.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, releasing music? We kind of touched on it. There's so many things to think about, and like, how is this going to be received, or what's the next thing? And from what I understand, as someone who doesn't release music, never say never, but currently no. It feels like artists kind of try and release consistently to kind of keep it ticking over.
Like,
but then that also
engagement.
Yeah, but that creates a huge pressure for the artist to create tracks, especially like tracks, the best tracks, right? Because you're like on this conveyor belt of making tunes.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel that?
For sure. But I tend not to just force. I just don't force it. And I just, if I haven't got music, I haven't got music. Because my creativity comes and goes, and I could have a month where I can't make a single song and it really stresses me out. Or I just stop and wait until that like creativity comes. And as soon as it comes, it's like, I'll make 5 songs in a day. Like, it's, yeah, I feel like creativity is a weird one in general. You can't just force it. And if you do, you make rubbish music.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, getting inspired by it, by things, is so random for me. I get inspired by so many different things and none of it really makes sense. I'll just like be going for a walk and I'll be like, oh, this tree is lovely. I'm going to make a song.
Are you tree hugging?
Yeah, I made a song about a magpie once. So I actually, it's released. It's called I Made Acquaintance with a Magpie. And it's literally about this magpie that was always outside my door in Newcastle when I was having my morning cig while I was like during exam season at uni. And I wrote a song of mine.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's so poetic.
Yeah, that's such so a poet.
You are.
That was random anyway. I don't know why I mentioned that.
No, it's the tinny, babe. I guess with your music, where do you want to take it sonically?
Sonically, I want to just carry on expressing myself. I don't really have a specific genre that I've always made, but I do like the more left field stuff now and the more club ready, heavy stuff, like faster beats, a lot of like trancey sounds mixed with like garagey sounds, big basses, lots of break beats as well. I think for me, it's just a mashup of everything because I love everything. I'm not like such a, I'm not a genre snob.
That's
like,
why I love your DJ sets.
Love that.
And tunes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I make whatever feels right at the time and I release whatever feels right at the time. I don't know if that's good for me as an artist in creative direction terms or anything like that, but I feel like it's what's good for me as a like person.
And that's really important as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree about the DJ sets. I think, yeah, it's so fun at your sets because you're just like, you don't know where it's going to go next. And I think that's one of my favourite things when I'm seeing a DJ, rather than them just like playing 2 hours of stuff that will kind of blur them. You know what I mean?
Not like the one, all the same song type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I really felt that when you just released that Ashanti edit.
Yeah.
Which I love, by the way. But I was just like, where's this come from? This is like random, but amazing.
Yeah, that was a bit random, but I love that. Yeah, I just make what I feel and play what I feel at the time. Because it's an expression of who you are, isn't it, music?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. For me, I'm like 20 personalities all in one. So for some people, it's just a black and white, easy. You can make how you're feeling and that's how you feel all the time. But for me, it's not. I just make random stuff.
I think we're coming towards the end. I'm going to ask.
Sorry for Callan.
For what?
Callan.
Callan.
Oh, that's the Yorkshire.
What does that mean?
Talking.
Oh, well. I'm glad you've been talking. This would have been a
calling too much.
Sorry for party rocking.
Never apologise. Final question for you. Your utopia.
Oh.
Take us there.
So my version of utopia. Well, I actually don't believe in utopia.
Oh, Grimes again.
Oh, it's
again.
A reference.
Sorry. It's good.
Utopia Talks reference. I don't know, my version of utopia is just never going to happen, I don't think, because there's too many twats in the world, but just no oppression, no bigots, no, everyone is just equal and they're doing what they want. It's pretty cliche, everyone's happy and there's only good tunes. Nobody's allowed to release crap tunes and there's somebody who decides it.
Is that you? Are you the person who decides?
Maybe, yeah.
What's the crappiest tune of all time?
Don't know.
Go on.
I'm looking you in the eye right now. Go on.
Do you know what? I'm not going to slag off any pop or rope, but do you know that bloody country rhythm song? it's a song that Fortet's been playing loads recently, and loads of people have been copying him. I think Fortet was playing it as a joke, and now everyone plays it, and it's like a really, really bad song. But I don't know, I feel like it could be your vibe.
Me? Oh, classic. Classic. Yeah, probably.
Wait, no, I'm not slagging off your DJ at all. I just feel like you love everything.
I'll have a listen. I'll let you know.
Yeah, it's like a dubstepy weird vibe. But yeah, maybe another crap song. What's your worst song?
What's my worst song? I know my best mate's one, Johnny, who you met at Park Life. You know that song that's like, once I was 7 years
old. Oh, I hate that.
He hated it. So, and he told me he hated it. So I just used to play it all the time just to piss him off. That's a good call though for a bad song.
That is that one.
Once I was 7 years old.
Like one of Ed Sheeran's. I like Ed Sheeran and I love his old stuff. But Castle on a Hill, I'm not a fan of.
Yeah.
Ben.
Yeah.
I also think Party Rock Anthem.
Party Rock is in the house tonight.
No, that's a hot take.
That's a hot take.
That's a hot take.
I don't know about that one, guys. I get it, but I don't like it. Objectively.
I'm with
what
that.
What about Gangnam Style?
That's in the bin as well.
Have you ever seen like him do that live?
No.
It's absolutely wild. Like everyone's like jumping and going like, oh. It's so good.
Whoopa Gangnam Style.
And the whole crowd's like, bump, bump, bump. Oh, you'll have to see a video.
Is your next set going to be Gangnam Style live PA from Psy? And everyone's going to be, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Live PA.
I don't think I ever would do that though.
I would.
That would be, I'm imagining.
Do what I would,
opening,
do it for the opportunity.
I'm imagining opening up my Instagram app and being like, what the fuck happened at Boardmasters? Why is Meg Ward with Psy?
My new besties, if you're listening.
He is, obviously.
Oh, Meg, love you.
I love yous.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it. See you. You want it to be? Is there more?
Is that it?
Is that it?
We've just sat and listened to you for an hour.
Oh, ungrateful.
No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I mean, you happy? Is there anything else you want?
Do you want us to cook you a meal?
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.